You ready? Here comes episode 132.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendlin and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 132nd episode of Road Trekking, the RV Lifestyle Podcast. Doesn't make any difference whether you have a Class A, a Class B, a Class C motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this show is for you, because here we talk about being out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, finding fun places to visit, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV experience. So we welcome you and are honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, hey, whatever you're doing, get out your calendar right now. If you're driving, have whoever's in the passenger seat get out their calendar and write down the date, August 21st, 2017. That's the day that millions and millions of people across the United States are going to see nature's most wondrous spectacle, a total eclipse of the sun. It is a scene of unimaginable beauty. The moon completely blocks out the sun. Daytime becomes a deep twilight. The sun's corona shimmers in the darkened sky. And it's rare to have a total eclipse, particularly visible across the whole continental United States from one end to another. And in this week's podcast, we offer a guide to understand and prepare for and to view this rare celestial event. It is an event that is tailor-made for owners of recreation vehicles, and we are going to talk a lot about that when we interview Michael Zeiler. He's the founder of the Great American Eclipse website, and this is a wonderful interview. He's going to tell us why RVers are in the best position to view this stupendous event. You will not want to miss that, and make sure you mark down August 21st, 2017, because you want to be in your RV that day. That interview is coming up in just a few minutes, and of course, we've got some audience Q&A. We're going to answer some of the email questions that we've gotten this week. We're going to talk about biodiesel for those of you who are driving Sprinter-based RVs. And we've got lots of RV news, and we've got some great tips and an off-the-beaten-path report. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hi, dear.
Hi.
How are you?
I am doing terrific.
Spring is here. It is now officially springtime, and
it's beautiful outside.
We are still in Michigan at our Sticks and Bricks house, and I don't know, temperature's pushing 50 now, and that's springtime in Michigan.
Absolutely delightful out.
We will soon be hearing the spring peepers.
That's true. That's They're going to be out there.
That's true. I didn't show you this. I got an email from somebody who said they didn't want to listen to this podcast anymore because they don't want to hear all of our family chit-chat.
Oh, well, don't listen.
That's good for you. But for all that, we get a whole lot of other people who say they love hearing us talk about what's going on in our lives. But I'm a little sensitive about this being family chit-chat. But you get when you listen to us, that's what you get.
You don't have to listen.
That's
and in
right.
the old days, you just wouldn't have listened. You wouldn't have had to let you know that you didn't like listening to it.
Oh, that's right. But now people just have to tell you. So, well, you know, it isn't for everybody, I guess. But and if this isn't for you, here's the neat thing. Look at the show notes for this episode. And every segment that we have on this, it's kind of like a magazine show, this podcast. And we have a little time code there. And if you just click on that from the show notes, it'll jump right to that part of the episode. And then you can forget our family chit-chat here. But, hey, as long as we're doing it, we're going to chit-chat. And I have something to chit-chat with you about today.
What's that?
Have you been on our Facebook group today?
Not today.
Good. I'm going to read you something. Somebody posts, and I want your reaction. And actually, they're looking for advice. So this is going to be pretty interesting. You ready?
Yeah, okay.
All right. This came... Oh, I got a link up to it. This was posted just today on our... our Facebook group, by the way, if you're not a member of that, it's a closed group. That means you have to get somebody to authorize you to join, and that's real easy to do. We've got almost, I think we're working on 13,000 people now who will soon be joining it. But here is a post that one of our readers, Patricia Parmley, wrote just today. She said, so this morning I noticed, you ready, Jennifer? You listening?
Yes.
A shredded snakeskin entwined in the front grill of my RV. Road Trek 190. It disappeared underneath and into the length of the vehicle. I was able to remove the skin. There was no snake attached. And to my surprise, the skin was still soft and stretchy, so it was very recent. At the widest point, the diameter was about 2 inches. Any advice on what to do with my RV now other than burn it to the ground? I'm located in East Texas, and we do have venomous snakes such as rattlesnakes and copperheads, but of course many are non-venomous. Unfortunately, I don't know if the snake is in there, and I do not know what he is. I fully understand the importance of snakes in the ecosystem. I'm a biologist. I don't want to kill him if he's non-venomous, but I do not want him in my RV either. I don't have any food in there currently, and I don't have any mice, so I don't think there would be any reason for him to stay, unless, of course, it's a female, and she's laying eggs. I wish you could see Jennifer's face now. Any advice? Thankfully, I haven't sold my house yet, so I'll not be spending time in the RV until I figure this out. What do you think of that?
Well, you get a hold of whoever is a snake specialist. I don't know who's this, what the term is for a snake specialist, some kind of exterminator.
Actually, we're working on an interview we're going to do with somebody in a few weeks about how to protect your pets when you're out camping in snake country. I think that'll be an interesting one. But this is a woman. I mean, her dilemma is she's worried that the snake is still in her RV.
And it could be going to have babies. You know, could be looking for a place to nest.
So what would you do? What would you do if I told you
sell
that was
me?
Sell the
RV. The logical thing to do.
No, that's what she's wondering. Well, a number of people have jumped in on our Facebook group, and I don't know how many answers we have to this something. You know, we've got like 50 different comments and questions, ranging from Kiki Dunnigan's, put a mouse in a cage underneath the road track and the snake will come out. But it's interesting. What most people say is that the way a snake sheds its skin is by rubbing its nose against something rough. Art Klingman, it's Ellie Klingman wrote this, and said basically a snake sheds its skin by rubbing its nose against something rough like a rock, a branch, or a vehicle grill, and many times the entire skin will then peel off intact, inside out. I think you're good. The snake with a newer, a roomier body will crawl away to do snaky things elsewhere, and the consensus seems to be that there's no reason for the snake to be in there, and just because you found the skin there, it's probably just used those sharp things on the grill. But she's a little afraid to go in. So we'll follow that for everyone. Somebody else posted a story on that Facebook group that happened to the Florida woman just this week. She somehow managed not to crash her car. She was driving down the road. She looked, she turned on her air conditioner, and she found a snake slithering out of her air conditioning vent. This was someplace near Tampa, and it was a red rat snake. They're non-venomous, but still. And the snake, what would you do then? Jennifer, you should see her face. This needs to be TV.
Oh, you want me to move to Florida, huh? In Texas? I'm not from the South. I'm from the North.
This is crazy. So, all right. I think the reaction.
You want me to move south? Do you?
I told everybody I was going to post that you hadn't read this, and I was going to surprise you with this on our the Facebook group, and it was worth it for me to see her face. Actually, she's kind of giving me dagger eyes now.
Well, a lot of people like snakes. You know, a lot of people have them as pets. I know people that have snakes as pets.
I hope I don't. Those strange people that have snakes
as
pets.
Actually, they're quite normal people. They just like snakes.
Oh, come on. How can you? Oh, well. Well, anyway, those are our snake stories. Are you ready to get to work with your own type? All right, we'll get off the snake stuff, but folks, you should have seen her face.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
Have you ever had trouble sleeping in your RV at night because it's too bright? Then listen up. Here's a do-it-yourself tip that will solve that problem.
We're going to talk to Nancy Richardson, and she's going to talk to us about how she took care of the problem of trying to keep that light out, whether you're in a Walmart parking lot or even some campgrounds. It's just too bright. So, Nancy, how did you solve this problem?
Well, we have a 2001 road trek, and it has the original curtains, which were quite thin. And so I looked and looked for fabric that I would like to work with. And my husband wanted something that would darken the camper more. And we also wanted something that would insulate around the windows more. I couldn't find any fabric on the bolt to use, but I did find drapery panels that were insulated and they were dark out. So I bought the panels because they matched the color in my road trek as well. And I took the hem out of the bottom and I took the header off the top of them and I pressed them and laid them out and laid my current curtains onto that and pinned them and cut around them with the extra amount that I needed for hemming around them, and sewed them up and put the tape around them to go into the channels on the road trek.
That's a great idea. And you didn't have any problem with the thickness of the fabric? It wasn't a problem with your machine?
No. My concern was the thickness of the fabric after I hemmed it. So in certain places, like where I had to put the header on it for the track, I used a bias tape opposed to making a double turn of a hem on it, so it made it thinner.
That is a great tip, and I think a lot of people will be doing that because you want that light out. It seems like no matter where you are, it can be the most wonderful spot in the whole world. It could be a full moon. Sometimes you just want it dark so that you can sleep.
Yes, and we did find that it worked very well the first time we were out with it as far as keeping the light out, as far as keeping out the cold and that. We did notice up against our back window where we sleep that it wasn't quite as cold on the chilly evenings. And we'll see when we get into a little bit more colder weather how well it keeps.
Thank you, Nancy. That's a great tip.
Thank you.
That is a great tip.
It truly is.
Sometimes it just gets way too light, particularly when you're blacktop boondocking in a Walmart or behind a Cracker Barrel or something like that, and there's a lot of those big, overhead lights.
Yeah. Even in campgrounds, they can have lights out.
They always do. They don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's often dark. Well, that's great. We'll have to try and figure all that out.
Do you have a tip that you'd like to share? Well, consider this an invitation. Send me your tip and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on your computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over and over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email inbox. I love hearing from you.
Jennifer's tip of the week is brought to you by Rad Power Bikes. RadPowerBikes.com, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes, now with free shipping and a special discount to road trekking listeners. And Rad Power Bikes has four different e-bike models now. And those four models fit a wide variety of rider wants and needs. They all can reach speeds of 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. All four models give riders the choice to ride pedal-free with throttle or utilize five different levels of pedal assist for an added boost, or you can combine the two. They're perfect for people who want to get back into riding. Maybe you're recovering from surgery or an injury, or you're looking for that extra boost to keep up with friends and family. Riders can travel between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. And Rad Power Bikes are priced often less than half that of comparable bikes on the market because the dealer retail markups are cut out. If you mention Road Trekking at checkout, you will get an additional $75 off, plus free shipping on all their e-bike models. Visit them, Rad Power Bikes, R-A-D, powerbikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. My name is Kevin. At the beginning of last year, I believe, you said you was going to review a new barbecue grill that you was taking along, and I haven't heard anything more about that. And can you let me know? I think it was called Volcano, if I remember right. And if you can, or if I missed it, direct me to the podcast where you mentioned it. Thank you. Have a great day.
Well, we haven't really put it to the test, Kevin, but it's a pretty neat grill. And I remember I got it to review about, I think, towards the end of summer, early fall. It is a pretty neat grill. It's basically a three fuel, has three different fuels. You can cook it on propane. You can use charcoal with it. Or you can use wood, and you can actually make it like a little campfire, and it all compresses down and kind of nests into each other. They're about $150, maybe a little less on Amazon, and I haven't taken it out because we have gone back to our basic Coleman camper. It's a little two-burner with a propane bottle, those little propane bottle, little two-burner, you know, kind of like a little grill, and we've
been happy with that.
Yeah, it's done a really nice job.
We have to be more adventuresome. They're counting on us.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, Kevin, I got that grill. I remember talking about it, and I put it aside, and I haven't put it in the Road Trek. So I will try and do you a whole video on it and show it. But it's not real big, and it has a nice little carrying case. The thing that I guess I kind of wonder about is how hard it is to clean, particularly if you're running a lot of wood, or you know, if you're burning wood in it, you want to rinse it out and dry it out. You don't want to just stick it underneath the basement of the motorhome where you sleep. Same with if you're cooking. We have the same problem with that grill we use. You have to clean that up.
I do.
Yeah, but it's a very intriguing grill. I saw somebody else who had one on one of our trips, and it kind of remembered, oh yeah, I forgot to bring that along and test it out. So I will try and dig that out, and certainly I will bring it west when we head to our big west trip where we go out to Glacier National Park and our big road trekking photographic safari out there later this summer in June. That's our long extended trip, and we'll be gone for many weeks, and we'll take it along then. And I'll use it as a campfire too. I'll do it all three ways, and we'll show you what it's like. So thanks for reminding of it, but I put a link if anybody's looking for this grill. I've heard great things about it. I have not personally used it yet, but it's the Volcano Grill. And if you go to the show notes for this episode, roadtrekking.com/132, you'll find a link to it, and you can look at it at Amazon and see if you liked it. All right, I have two questions here that have come in by email that I wanted to answer this week. We usually give preference to those who send in the voicemail questions like Kevin's, but let's clear up some email. This comes from Neil, Neil wants to know this question. He says, just wondering if you have encountered any problems using biodiesel in your Road Trek Sprinter. I have the same chassis with a Winnebago unit, and I'm planning a cross-country trip this summer. Do you encounter places where you could not find regular diesel, and if so, were there any problems? Well, Neil, this is you need a real great mechanic to answer all this, but let me just try and go down to this. The controversy is that many states, I think there's probably 8-9 states, some of them in the West particularly, that have mandated that people selling diesel should use biodiesel. There's a lot of reasons why they do that. A lot of it has to do with money and growing crops and all that stuff and keeping their own agriculture. I don't know. But anyway, Mercedes-Benz, the maker of the Sprinter, sent out a document some years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, saying that diesel fuel is containing a higher percentage of biodiesel, it's like B6 to B20, as well as straight biodiesel, which is like B100, may cause severe damage to your engine fuel system and are not approved. Well, that's gotten a lot of attention. They have since waffled on that. They have since modified that a little bit. They've sent out one notice after that. They said the Mercedes-Benz limited warranty doesn't cover damages caused by the use of fuels that do not meet Mercedes-Benz approved fuel standards. And that got people all upset because that's the only kind of diesel fuel you can get in some states. And then in January, they modified that again. And the new version basically is a little more nuanced, shall we say. They say that the use of biodiesel fuels is not advised. It's not approved. It may cause severe damage. And some of the reports said it would not show up until after 100,000. But then they added, if customers cannot avoid the use of biodiesel fuel between B6 and B20, It's critical for them to monitor their engine oil level and engine running performance. So here's the take on it. Although that text can be described as sort of artful hedging, some would say a little self-contradicting, it kind of acknowledges the reality of the current fuel marketplace and in a backhanded sort of way suggests that you can use it if you have no choice. But the requirement to check for oil dilution, which appears to be an issue no matter how pure the biodiesel, needs to be taken seriously. So if you see any issues with the consumption, the way you use oil, my guess is that if push came to shove in a warranty claim situation, it would hinge on the presence or absence of you taking it in for regular checkups, you know, which you're going to do anyway. So here's what everybody thinks, that you can use what's available. Try and minimize the use of anything over B5. Keep a close eye on your oil levels and then let the chips fall. There's a lot of sprinters around. We have not encountered that problem at all. Mercedes-Benz is a little bit obtuse on this. They seem unwilling to commit, but at any rate, give it a try. I would not worry about it. And if you can keep that fuel level to biofuel number 5 or lower, then you're probably okay. And you're probably okay anyway. You're not going to be doing this. It's not going to be a steady diet. Controversial topic. Here's another one. We're getting into all the controversies this week. This is from Annette. She says, "Greetings. I've recently found your website. I can't stay long enough to hear and see and read enough, but I'm working my way through it. I'm in the process of purchasing my first Road Trek, a 2009 170 Popular with about 25,000 miles. Congratulations, one owner." She says, "Your podcasts have been so helpful. I've wanted a Road Trek for the last 10 years. I've been actively looking for 3. My question is, do you have any recommendations for a company for extended warranties? Thank you very much for your helpful tips and information, Annette." Well, 2009 is, you know, it's an 8-year-old vehicle right now. So you have probably gone through the original warranty that I think it's a 6-year warranty that Road Trek has. But I am not a big proponent of extended warranties on anything. For one thing, they cost a lot of money. Now, true, if you run into major, major repair jobs, an extended warranty will help. I think that's probably the strongest argument for having a policy. In fact, it's the peace of mind that it gives you when you're driving. But if you do want one, I do not have a company I recommend. Everybody seems to be offering them. You'll get lots of offers once you register the title. They all the insurance companies scan those things, and anything old they'll try and sell you one. But if you're looking at one, be sure and read the fine print. See what it covers, what it doesn't cover. But my best advice is this: find out where you're going to have this thing serviced, and talk with the service manager of the places that you're going to have service work done, and ask them for what their recommendation. What companies pay promptly? Ask them. And don't look for loopholes to get out of paying for each claim. That's what a lot of them do. And that will give you, I think, more information, more valuable than anything I can suggest. Talk to the people who deal with these guys all the time, and those are the service shops. I don't have one for ours. Ours is, of course, still under warranty because it's under 6 years old. But when we bought our first one, which was a used 2006, we didn't get one for there. And the dealers try to sell you one. Let's face it, it's a pure profit maker for the dealer and a big commission for the salesperson. So they will try and sell you one. We don't have one. But I think the strongest argument for one is the peace of mind it gives you that should something really major go wrong, you are covered. But, you know, they cost money. They cost a considerable amount of money. So there you go. Hey, you got a question? Here's how we can hear from you.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the Send Voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
And the sponsor of our questions of the week, always every week, are our friends at Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas. three dealerships, all owned by the same folks, different part of the country, bringing you a combined huge inventory of Class B motorhomes from those three different locations. So if you were in the market for a Class B, you know, by the way, how high in demand they are. And that's why you'll want to check in with these three dealers. You just go to their websites. You can find links to them from on the roadtrekking.com blog, but they're vancityrv.com, crestonrv.com, and wagontrailrv.com. Three dealers. They all specialize in Class Bs from the major manufacturers. They have new and used models in stock on the lot right now. They're all ready to deal. They have road treks and pleasure ways and leisure travel vans and Class B and B pluses and other small motorhomes. So vancityrv.com, crestonrv.com, wagontrailrv.com. Here's Dan, the van man, and he's going to tell you what's happening this week.
Thanks, Mike. Well, spring's here. Let's get some spring sales going. All of our 2016 models have some great discounts. So you can check out all three of our dealerships. Give us a call today, and we'll make you a great deal. Hey, just a reminder, Van City RV is going to be having their spring show here on the lot. That's going to be March 30th through April 1st. We'll have some of the factory reps here to display the units. You can come by, check them out, get some questions answered, and we'll make you a great deal.
That's Van City RV in St. Louis, Missouri.
They say every dog has its day. In this part of the podcast, it's time for tips, resources, and travel advice about bringing pets on our RV adventures.
We all know that humans need skin protection from too much sun, but do you know dogs do too? Now, granted, dogs' heavy fur coat minimize the risk over much of their bodies, but one part of them is very susceptible to sun damage, their nose. A sunburned nose on your dog can be painful, and it can also increase your dog's risk of cancer. Search for sunscreens that are designed specifically for dogs, and consult your veterinarian for recommendations. You should find a couple to choose from at any pet store. Whatever you do, do not use human sunscreen. Human sunscreens usually contain zinc oxide, and zinc oxide can be toxic to dogs if they eat it because of the zinc. So check the label before you apply. You don't need to cover your dog all over, just in the areas that will be exposed to the sun. Apply it to the snout and nose. Dog hair doesn't need protection.
Well, there you go. You can send Jennifer your pet tip, and we'll take a look at it, and would love to feature it here as well. Just send her a note, jennifer@roadtrekking.com. This part of the podcast is brought to you by Dozer's Dental Chews, an all-natural and healthy treat your dog will love. Available through Amazon and sold at home goods stores nationwide. You can also go to roadtrekking.com/dozers, D-O-Z-E-R-S. We've been talking about this now for a couple of months. This has emerged as Bo, our dog's favorite treat. Dozer's Dental Chews. They're 100% all natural. They're gluten-free. They're low in fat. They have no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, no artificial preservatives. And best of all, they're made in the USA. Now, if you are really picky about what you give your pet, you know that some of the pet food manufacturers overseas in places like China have been involved in some pretty serious recalls because of unhealthy ingredients or contamination of some of the pet foods and some of the pet treats that they've sent over to the U.S. That's why we are delighted to have Dozer's on, because they're made right here in the USA in upstate New York, high standards there. And these are, my dog just loves Dozer's. They clean his teeth, which is a big thing for us. That means that it freshens his breath and it reduces plaque as he chews them. They're different than other dental chews in that they're soft, so that the chewed pieces will kind of mold and get in between the teeth and more effectively remove anything that's in there. And they have little hollow pockets that you can pack with your dog's favorite treat, like peanut butter or something. We don't. We give them straight out of the bag, dozers. And I just say the word, he comes running. He absolutely loves them. You need to try them for your pet. They come in different sizes for different pets, from little guys all the way up to the big lunkers. So you check them out. Dozers Dental Chews, roadtrekking.com/dozers, or look at Amazon, or head yourself on over to, just go right over to roadtrekking.com/dozers. All right, we were talking at the top of the program about you keeping the date August 21st, 2017 on your calendar open and ready for use in your RV. We are, and we are pretty excited about it, because that is the day that millions of people across the United States are going to see the most wondrous spectacle, the total eclipse of the sun. And this is just amazing. It starts in the west along the coast of Oregon, and it shoots across the whole country, a big swath through the middle of the country, in a relatively narrow band where you'll get the totality, the complete blackout. But this is a boon for RVers across the country right now. Farmers and ranchers and people with that are underneath that band of totality are opening it up for camping. This is the spectacle you'll want to see. You will want to be in your RV out underneath that band. And we've got a map that you can see with the show notes for this episode. But the best way is to introduce you right away to our guest. His name is Michael Zeiler. He's with a website, the best website we have found on the eclipse, called Great American Eclipse. So let's bring Michael on. Joining us right now from his home in California is Michael Zeiler. Michael is the creator of the GreatAmericanEclipse.com website. It is the best resource I have found anywhere about the eclipse. And I think that part of it, Michael, is because of your background. Would we be correct in calling you a cartographer?
Yes, I certainly am a cartographer. I work for the world's largest mapping software company. And so my day job is to write books about how to create better maps. And I've been a long-time eclipse chaser since 1991. So I decided to put the two together to apply my professional skills to make eclipse maps that are accurate, expressive, and beautiful. So that's my goal.
Well, they are, and folks who look at the show notes for this episode of the podcast will see an example of one of your maps right there, and of course we'll link to the website. Let's start off real in general terms about this total eclipse of the sun, what that means, and then how rare is this in terms of when's the last time we've had something like this in the United States, and when will we have it again?
Well, the last time that we had a total solar eclipse within the continental U.S. was 1979 up in the Pacific Northwest. So that's been a gap of 38 years since the continental U.S. has experienced totality. It's also been 99 years since the last total solar eclipse that passed this country from the Pacific coast to the Atlantic coast. So while total solar eclipses happen somewhere in the world every 16 months or so, for a given area, they are fairly rare.
This one is, as you said, from the east, or from the west to the east, and it kind of bisects from the northwest down towards the southwest or southeast, the whole country. Would you sort of describe it? It happens on August 21st, and of course, for our audience who are travelers and explorers and RVers who love to be out there, this is such an incredible opportunity for them to see the amazing eclipse that we're going to have.
And of course, RVers have a leg up on most of the rest of the country because you've brought your accommodations with you, which is a beautiful plan for this eclipse. Every single day, I get emails from people who are farmers or own a field in the path of totality, and they want to get the word out that they're going to be opening up their fields for people to come and camp. So Given that this eclipse is in August, which is a perfect time for camping, my advice to people, even if they can't find any hotel accommodations, is to just go. Take your RV, take your camper, take your tent. Just go. You'll find a place to sleep, and it will be the most amazing sight of your life.
Start with a description of totality, and how narrow of a band is the is totality? That means a, you know, the complete eclipse.
Yes, the path of totality across the United States this August varies from about 60 miles wide to 71 miles wide. And this is exactly where you have to be to see the main show, to see the moon completely cover the sun for a couple of minutes. And once that moment appears, you will just be dumbfounded by the sight before you. It's like standing on an alien planet and seeing something you've never seen before in your life. The sun's corona, its atmosphere, is literally the most beautiful object in the sky, and it rotates around over us every single day, all of our lives. But we can never see this beautiful object except for the precious moments of the total solar eclipse.
So it's a narrow band of about from 61 miles to 71 miles, and that is where you need to be underneath that the sun in that area. There's a map, of course, that if people are looking at the website, they'll see. But for those who are first listening to this, describe where it first appears. It's the time of that, and then where we last would see it on the continental U.S.
Okay, the very first landfall of this eclipse on the United States is just north of Newport, Oregon, at a place called Yakina Head, a rocky outcrop. That's the first spot, and then it races across the nation, starting around 2,000 miles an hour.
Wow.
And then slowing down to about 1,400 miles an hour in Kentucky. And then it leaves Cape Romaine in South Carolina at about 2:48 p.m. on that day.
So that would be Eastern time. That would be Eastern time, 2:48 p.m.
Yes.
And what is the time, the Pacific time, when it first appears in Oregon?
10:15.
So 10:15. So this whole thing is over in about an hour and a half or so. Then.
Exactly.
That's fast.
Exactly.
Yeah. From west
That's
to east.
Fast.
Yeah. And.
But. But there is an opportunity with that 93 minutes of totality across the nation, and that is that solar astronomers are very keen to see the evolution of the corona during those 93 minutes. So there's several national experiments that are being done across the country to watch what transpires during that hour and a half. That's a rare opportunity because it's uncommon for an eclipse track to pass over such a populated belt of people.
Hmm. You mentioned that it slows down to about 1,400 miles an hour over Kentucky.
Yeah.
Would that mean that Tennessee, Kentucky, that region would be perhaps the best place to see the totality, at least for the longest period of time?
Any place along the path is a good place to see totality as long as you have clear skies.
That weather forecast. It's just like sometimes I want to get up and I always want to photograph the Milky Way at night. It's pretty rare to get a clear sky, but of course it'll still get dark even if it's cloudy. You just won't see the.
It will.
Yeah, you won't see the corona.
Yeah.
What kind of special protection for the eye do people need to have on it? This isn't something they can they look at when it's in totality? Can they look at that with the naked eye?
Well, here's the thing. When during the partial phases of the eclipse, roughly 1 hour leading up to the totality, we've got a partial eclipse, And to watch the partial eclipse, you need to have cardboard eclipse glasses or something similar and safe like that. Once totality begins, you take them off, and you can look directly with your eyes at the corona for the 2 minutes or so.
Wow.
So it is safe during the 2 minutes or so to look directly at it.
This is a pretty exciting thing to do. On your website, The Great American Eclipse, I want to just tell people why they need to see this. It has a list of the best places to view, a description of the splendor of it all, what kind of a phenomenon. But where your skill, Michael Zeiler, really comes in as a cartographer, a map maker, is in the maps that you have put together. You have maps, national maps, Oregon eclipse, Idaho, the states it goes through, Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas. So wherever you're going to look, Michael has put together a map that shows you where you will see it best. And what I find so amazing about your website is how much work you have put into it. There's no advertising on it. There is a store where you can pick up things that are good, some books and maps and posters. And the first thing I want to do is I want to check out your apparel. I like that. I'm going to get one of those t-shirts. But also some of these, I think do you have some of the glasses that people need that you would recommend?
We definitely carry the safe eclipse glasses that people need. And they're actually pretty affordable.
Yep. So I'm going to send people right there. Just go. And as you look at and appreciate all these maps and the work that Michael has done, just go to the store and buy something. Get a t-shirt, get a hat, get the maps. it's well worth it. And this is something that you're not going to see. I love the history that you have put together of the total eclipse. That has been really exciting.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you get calls all the time from people who want to make some farmland available. Do you intend, or is there a place where people can find a master list of all of that?
Funny you should mention that, because I'm working on exactly that right now. What I'm working on is a way for people to enter their own information on a form on a website page. They can enter their information about their event and the address. All I really need is the address to automatically place it on a map, and then I will have maps for each state where people can see fields that are being offered, and then simply click on that symbol for that field, and then they'll get all the information. They'll get a phone number, a website, an email address, whatever is appropriate.
That is a great idea. Do you have any idea when that will be done, when that will be ready?
Within the next 2 weeks.
Okay, and as this of course being released in mid to late March 2017, so you'll have plenty of time. People listen to this podcast now, they'll be listening to it for years, so they'll be listening to this in 2020, and we'll have to say, hey, it already happened, you know. But for those of you, many RVers right now are of course planning their summer trips, and August 21st has to be a time that you make sure you have some time available to get there, because this is something that you're not going to see until when again? When is that date?
Well, the next one in the U.S. is April 8th, 2024. That's the next one coming up for us here in the U.S.
That is a long time. That's a long time away. So the 21st of August is a Monday. So those of you who have jobs that you've got to work around, just make sure you get a Monday off. Take a long weekend. But for the rest of you, this is a time to start. I mentioned at the very beginning, before I had you on the air here, we have a plot in Oregon right underneath it where we're doing a road tower gathering. But I know many others are looking at Tennessee and Kentucky in the mid part of the country, and of course some great stuff in Nebraska, and your website will give folks across this country a great list where they can go and they can see. What about those who just can't get away? How about, you know, from the northern part up at the Canadian border down to the Gulf Coast? How dark will it get there when they're not in that band of totality?
Yeah, it depends how close they are. If they're within 200 miles, daylight will become noticeably darker, and it'll be eerie looking, and the shadows will be sharp. But if you're on in Canada or Mexico, the eclipse probably won't be noticeable at all. There will be a dimming of sunlight, but it won't be that obvious, and an ordinary person probably wouldn't even notice that day was different.
Okay, so you got to get out there, folks. That's all. This is a really awesome opportunity to see it, and it's the whole country. And we'll send everybody there. Michael, I want to thank you again for all the work that you have done on your website, and we look forward to checking it in a couple weeks and seeing where people can stay. I know many, many farms and ranches are just making plots of land available, and of course RVers with motorhomes, which are all self-contained, you don't have to worry. You've got everything you need there. The website again, and just go to the show notes for this episode, and you can see links to everything we've talked with Michael about, greatamericaneclipse.com. Michael Zeiler, thank you so much for being our guest today on Road Trekking.
Thank you, and it's been my pleasure as well.
And as I mentioned, there are a lot of places where RVers will be gathering to watch this. We are, as part of the road trekking community, our friend Jan Seiner has organized a great event for all of us up in Oregon, right underneath the band of totality. And that's the road trekking gathering August 21st. And you can find out information. Just go to roadtrekking.com and do a search there for Eclipse, and you'll find all our stories on that. There's a lot of people there. I think we still have a few openings available for that one too, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Take a look at that band. You can see the map on the show notes for this episode, roadtrekking.com 132, and make some plans to get your family out there and enjoy this eclipse. It's really going to be a sight to see. I'm pretty excited about it. Hey, the interview of the week brought to you every week by our friends at sunshinestaterv.com in Gainesville, Florida, where every new or used road trek is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the country. Sunshine State RVs is where you will find the largest selection of some of the best Class B used RVs in the United States. If you're looking for any kind of a Class B RV from any of the major manufacturers, you need to check their website first, sunshinestaterv.com, or make a trip to sunny Gainesville, Florida. Their RVs range from the 1990s all the way up to the current year. They sell brand new road treks. They're one of the newer road trek dealers in the country, and they've got a full line of all the new road treks. They have an incredible service department. And when you look at their inventory of used and new RVs, you will find all the most popular brands are there. In the used category, they have road treks, they have pleasure ways and Winnebagos and leisure travel and many, many others. You just are not going to find a wider selection of used RVs anywhere else than that they have there in Class B RVs. And they all go through this very elaborate 172-point inspection in which they ensure that all the mechanical and manual systems are in top condition, that every RV is road tested by the folks at Sunshine State RVs. They go over the interior components just as entirely as the outside. You need to check them out. Sunshine State RVs.com.
News. Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
All right, we've got three stories for you this week. The first one for a lot of you who are heading up to Alaska, north to Alaska, to Anchorage in particular. That's everybody seems to visit that if you're going into Alaska. Well, they are back again considering an RV overnight ban. This has been kind of an ongoing controversy up there in Anchorage. It didn't go over well when an Anchorage assembly member tried to ban the practice of RV camping in parking lots of the big box stores like Walmart or Fred Meyer. They tried that last year. It did not go over well. Big uproar. And at that point, the proposal was dropped, and it was very unpopular among tourists. And Anchorage, of course, is a big tourist town. Well, it is back. It is just now being offered again from a different assembly member there in Anchorage. And that's the sad part of the story. This thing just doesn't go away. And if you dig in a little bit deeper, you'll see that the new proponent of this is a freshman assemblyman named Eric Croft. And he's introducing an ordinance that would ban all overnight parking of RVs, travel trailers, mobile homes in commercial and industrial lots, with the exception of dealerships or repair shops. It doesn't apply to residential areas, though it says visitors can apply. Visitors can only stay in their RVs and motorhomes for up to 90 days if it's in an RV area, if it's in your own yard, in other words. The interesting thing is Croft says he watched RVs park in the Walmart lot over the years, and he said he's heard complaints from from a campground owner. And folks, this is where all of these anti-RV overnight camping ordinances come. They almost all come from campground owners because they're mad that people are overnight camping in a Walmart. And so the campground owners, they have a very very strong lobbying group in Washington. They introduce these proposed ordinances. They help financially back. I don't know if that's the case up in Alaska, but in other places, they financially back some of these city council guys. Anything they can do to make it to force you to go spend $50 or whatever they charge to stay overnight in their campgrounds. And obviously this guy's getting input from campground owners there too. And we've talked before how Walmart welcomes RVers. And the only times you know you can't stay in a Walmart parking lot overnight is when the city has an ordinance against it. And that is spreading across the country, and much of it is driven, as we've reported before, by campground owners who don't like the competition. But anyway, it's back up in Alaska. We can only hope that it gets shot down again as it was last year. All right, some good news if you're following springtime. We had a good story about Yellowstone not long ago on the podcast, and now we can say that there has been the first confirmed sighting of a grizzly bear. They are waking up from their winter nap, and the first confirmed sighting of a grizzly at Yellowstone. The sleepy giants are waking up from their winter nap, and they found one between Mammoth Hot Springs and Tower Roosevelt last week. That was the first confirmed sighting, and then even later on, hours after that, they found two more grizzlies scavenging carcasses in the northern section of the park. When the bears emerge from hibernation, they look for food, and they feed usually on elk or bison that might have died over the winter. And sometimes they can be very particularly aggressive because they're very hungry while they're feeding, so be careful. But the grizzly bears have woken up, and springtime is returning to Yellowstone, even though they still got a lot of snow to clear from those roads. And here's one more story. This is a great one. If you have ever been in Arkansas and visited the Arkansas Crater of Diamonds State Park, it's a great state park where they let you actually go out and look for diamonds. Well, this happened, that's in Murfreesboro, Arkansas. If you're ever going through, it's well worth spending some time there. It's a fun state park. It's in southern Arkansas. And last week, while in Arkansas for a baseball tournament, a 14-year-old kid named Kalel Langford from Centerton, Arkansas, he was out with his folks at Crater of the Diamond State Park, and they got there on Saturday, and by the end of the day, he had registered the seventh largest diamond ever found at that state park since 1972. It was about a 7-carat diamond, and this thing was huge. He was walking near the east drain there in the southern portion of the park's diamond search area. He spotted this shiny dark brown gem, and picked it up, and he got it. It was a seven, it was a massive carat. It was 7 carats, and prices vary. How much is it worth? Well, it's hard. If you look at a site call, I looked at the diamond registry, and prices for a 1-carat diamond is between $3,080 and $26,950. You know, it depends on clarity and quality and all that. So at the least, that thing would be worth $22,000. At the most, about $189,000. So diamond hunting in Arkansas, put that on your bucket list. That sounds pretty cool. This portion of the podcast brought to you by Alde, A-L-D-E, the only name in heat that you need to know when it's time to go looking for a heating system for your RV. It's now available on a number of different RV platforms, and I urge you to make that Alde system a priority when you're shopping for a new one. Tell the dealer that's what you want. Why do you want it? Well, because it's like the high-end baseboard heat that you find in estate-type homes. The Alde system is a hydronic system. Alde system brings so many features and benefits. It's a silent heat. It's a radiant heat. You don't have that forced air sound, that noise, that dryness that comes from a forced air propane heater. Now, they do run on propane, but they heat up the water, and it's the water, the radiant heat of the water, that heats your coach. It makes it so efficient. The whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC. It will extend the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. And you get all these great options. The one that we have in our Road Trek CS Adventurous XL is heated floors. And if you've never had heated floors in an RV, you do not know what you're missing. It is so nice in the middle of the night or in those cold, chilly mornings to get up and have that floor so comfortably warmed. You got to check it out. Alde, A-L-D-E. Alde is the only name you need to know in heat when choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
Time to check in with our pal, Steve Van Dinter. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Mike. On March 23rd, puppy lovers from across the country will celebrate their furry friends as part of National Puppy Day. And whether you've got a new pup or a seasoned dog, you can, of course, up your pet game with the use of some tech. Well, the Nest Cam security camera is the perfect device for new puppy owners, allowing you to keep your eye on what matters most. Free live streaming lets you see if your pup is getting into places that a puppy shouldn't, or perhaps just sleeping peacefully. As a bonus, you can let them know you care by talking to them from inside the tablet or mobile app. Well, when it comes to taking puptastic pics, there's no better way to do it than with the Google Pixel. Not only do you get a best-in-class camera, but thanks to unlimited cloud storage with Google Photos, you'll never have to worry about running out of space. And if you're prone to temporarily misplacing things while hanging at the dog park, the Slim Tile Bluetooth Tracker could be a lifesaver. Tile Slim is about the size and width of two credit cards placed together. That means you can easily slide it into the pocket of your jacket, inside your wallet, or attach it to your doggy fanny pack. Should any of those go missing, simply launch the app and click on its name and you'll be all set. Well, who says technology is just for humans? The following apps are sure to get two paws up. First, an app called Dog Teaser. Just tap one of the bones and get a bark, doorbell, dog whistle, and more, all of which will perk your pet up. And if you're looking to soothe them, try the Pet Acoustics app. It plays music that's been designed specifically for your pet in frequency, volume, and rhythm, which will surely come in handy if your new pet is excited by the arrival of any house guests. Well, with this week's traveling technology tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
And this part of the podcast is brought to you by Verizon, which operates America's most reliable 4G LTE network. It's the only network we use when Jennifer and I are out and about on the road throughout all of North America. Why? Because it's better. It really is. If you look at the surveys, the three major leading network studies, year after year, multiple tests, period after period of measurement, Verizon always ranks highest in network quality performance. They rank highest in network performance satisfaction, and they rank highest in overall network performance. I use the Verizon data card, the Jetpack. I set up a little Wi-Fi network inside our RV. I use it to ship video out to NBC for my weekly PC mic stuff. I use it to upload all of these podcast files and photos that I do for the blog, and it's just always reliable. Can your network say that? Is your network that reliable? If you're stuck on the wrong network, head over to Verizon and get yourself unstuck. There you go. Verizon, the official sponsor of the road trekking adventures out there in the world.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion
you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
And this one is from our pal Michael Deutsch, who has a great spot right in the center of the country.
Hello, Mike and Jennifer. This is Mike Deutsch from Indiana with another Off the Beaten Path report. Illinois is known as the land of Lincoln, but did you know Indiana is the boyhood home of our famed president, Abraham Lincoln? Nestled in the foothills of southern Indiana, Spencer County are some of the old stomping grounds of Abraham Lincoln and home of Lincoln State Park. The park is located on Highway 162 east of US 231. Like most of Indiana's state parks, Lincoln has something to offer everyone. From the nature center to the lake, and from the hiking trails to the beach, and from the canoe rental to the campground, there's something for the young and old alike. We visited the state park for an extended weekend in the late fall. We were surprised to find the campground was sold out, but lucky for us, we had made reservations. The campground boasts a primitive tent camping area, a large electric RV site area near the lake, family cabins, and a group camping area. The RV campground has nice gravel sites and older pine trees with younger hardwoods growing as well. We found the lake to have nice scenic vistas to see the fall colors or to catch a sunset. The hiking trail around the lake is always a favorite, offering a steep hill climb up to a fire tower. For those that like heights, be sure to count the number of stairs on your way up for the view. Across the highway from the state park is the Lincoln Boyhood National Memorial area. It has a recreated 1820s homestead and a historic cemetery, a hiking trail, and a memorial building with indoor exhibits. If thrill rides and theme parks are your thing, be sure to visit Holiday World and Splash and Safari, a short drive east on 162 in Santa Claus, Indiana. Holiday World's a favorite family favorite for us, offering big roller coasters, a large water park, and small rides for the kids. It is very affordable for families, offering free soft drinks, free parking, free sunscreen, and free Wi-Fi. We found the food to be affordable and delicious as well. So whether you're looking for some adventure in the great outdoors, a history lesson, or a roller coaster ride, look no further than southern Indiana, Spencer County. Until next time, I'll see you out there.
All right, Michael Deutsch. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you being there. And I want to welcome a new sponsor for our Off the Beaten Path section. It's brand new Road Trek Dealers. It is now the newest Road Trek dealer. They've added a couple of dealers, and this is a brand new one. For those of you particularly in the upper Midwest, listen up. Our new sponsor is Steinbring Motor Coach. And Steinbring Motor Coach is in suburban Minneapolis, and they have a reputation that is built on quality motorhomes and incredible pricing and service. Since 1917, the Steinbring family has been bringing you the best products and service in the transportation industry. Their sales staff has decades of experience in the recreation vehicle industry. They're celebrating 100 years in business, a third generation family business, along with being named a Blue Ribbon Dealer by RV Business Magazine. Steinbrins has been the top 50 dealer so many times I can't even begin to count them. They offer new and used beautiful Newmar Class A motorhomes, and now they also sell brand new Road Trek Class B motorhomes. And also for sale are pre-owned coaches. They've got a great selection of used vehicles from brands like Road Trek and Winnebago and Itasca and Tiffin and Fleetwood, Holiday Rambler, Monaco. They've been in business so long, and they have a wide selection of consignments. So no matter what you're looking for, Class A, Class B, Class C, diesel pusher, gas, toy hauler, you will be sure to find your next RV at Steinbrings. You check them out, and they're brand new. So do me a favor. Let them know you heard us talking about it at Run Road Trekking, the podcast, and tell them, welcome aboard. We are so glad to hear that you guys will be on the Road Trekking podcast.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Well, March is marking down the end of the RV show season, because with spring and warm weather, we're all out there on the roads in our RVs. But a lot of people still looking for them. And there's two shows this weekend coming up that I want to put on our calendar. The Progressive Insurance Northwest Sports Show. That is in Minneapolis, March 23rd through the 26th. And you'll find that at the Minneapolis Convention Center. And down in Indianapolis, Indiana, it is the Midwest Outdoor Expo, March 24th through the 26th at the Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Now, those are the only two I know about this weekend. We have a complete list of all the shows. They start up again in earnest, really, in the fall, and then there's a lot of events that are happening, and you can find all of those from our friends at the Recreation Vehicle Industry Association, and I've got a link for them under the podcast notes section here on the blog. Just go to roadtrekking.com/132.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking.
Well, so ends another episode of Road Trekking, the RV Lifestyle Podcast. And remember, you need to be a part of the show. We want you to have your voice heard, and you can do that by recording a voicemail message. Just click the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website. We invite you to also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Then every Wednesday when a new episode is released, it will show up right there on your app. And you'll know it's there, and you can just click it and play it. We invite you also to join our mailing list. We send out a special newsletter to about 23,000 subscribers every Monday. Kind of some inside news and stuff that you might have missed over the past week. You can sign up right from the blog at roadtrekking.com. Till next Wednesday with another episode, on behalf of my wife Jennifer and our dog Bo, I'm Mike Wendland, road trekking across North America. So long, everybody.